I tell you, all y'all that have hidden talents and gifts that you've got, don't wait until it's a month before you PCS out of here, before you start letting it out. Kira, she goes to school at Northside, and she invited me to come for one of the plays they were doing or something they were doing, and she sang in it. And I said, Kira, you can sing. You can sing good. And, you know how teenagers are, I said, no, you really sing. You sing really well. You need to sing more. We finally got her to get in the choir, and it was just like a couple months ago. And so I told her, I said, when y'all get to Alabama, you don't wait.
Yeah.
Like, 2 years before you let them know that you have a special gift from God.
Amen.
I said, in fact, I'm looking the pastor up and calling him before you get there. And I'm going to tell that guy just how gifted you are before you get there. Good kids. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, your Bibles. Let's read through a few verses. We've been teaching for the Bible college. We've been teaching 8, 9, and 10. And we've been teaching all of 1 Corinthians. But when we got to 8, 9, and 10, they're kind of a package, 8, 9, and 10. And I preached on it last Sunday a little bit and then taught on it afterwards in the Bible college class again. And I felt like we had a really great Bible college class on Tuesday night. I didn't have them record it. We just kind of were able to talk through some things that maybe people deal with some of this. And so what 8, 9, and 10 in 1 Corinthians is about, remember, all of 1 Corinthians is a rebuke from beginning to end of 1 Corinthians. He's straightening out something that's wrong in the church, and he's trying to fix it. But one of the things that's a problem in 8, 9, and 10, well, it actually even goes back a little bit further than that, is you have people that now are saved, and they realize they have liberty, and now they want to start living their life for themselves instead of living their life for God, and they want to start doing things that makes me feel good. There's nothing wrong with that, really, except for when it starts getting in the area of sin or when it starts getting in the area of being a stumbling block to somebody else that is trying to get to God. That's when you start having some real problems. What happens if you were to go back all the way back to 1 Corinthians 5, you've got an issue. He's dealt in 1 through 4 about wisdom. Now you get to chapter 5, and you've got a man that this has been reported to Paul, and Paul's wrote back to try to straighten it out. You have a man that he said that this man in the church is doing something that the Gentiles, the lost world, isn't even doing. He's having an inappropriate relationship with his father's wife. Evidently, it's not his mother. It must be his father's. Maybe his mother's passed away. Maybe it's a divorce. But he's having a relationship with his father's wife, and they're having this relationship. And he said, this needs to be dealt with. I've got to deal with this. This is causing a real poor testimony in the community. So they have to do it there. Then you get to chapter 6, and you've got a Christian going to court against another Christian. Now, that's not saying, something that's an actual crime has been committed. We're talking about, you dinged my car door, and we can't get along with it. I used this as an illustration the other day. I thought this was a great illustration. It would be like if we went to court, and what took place was, Andrew Williams did some of the work on my house. He did the interior of my house. Now, I have some leaks in my house. It's not because of what he did. He was inside. This is some stuff that was outside. But let's just say he did some of that work, and I went to Andrew and said, hey, I've got some really issues. My house has got some leaks in it. And Andrew says, well, you didn't have any warranty with me, and it's your problem now. And then I start saying, well, no, it's your problem. He says, no, it's your problem. And we couldn't work this situation out. And then we decided to do this. I'm going to go to court. I'm going to sue Andrew. And then when we got to court, they asked us in front of all these lost people, so how do you guys know each other? Well, I'm his pastor and he's my song leader. Like, wait a minute. You two, you're the pastor and he's the song leader? Yeah, that's how you know each other. And y'all are suing each other? What a testimony this is. This is the kind of thing that's going on in that church, and he's trying to get it fixed. So chapter 5, it's I'm just going to do what I want to do when it comes to immorality. Chapter 6, I have no care for other brethren. I'm not working things out. Chapter 7, you have some things in fornication and even divorce and some things with that. And should I just leave my spouse? They're not believing the same way I do. He answers some of that. But then when you get to 8, 9, and 10, you've got issues about going and eating things that have been sacrificed to idols, and this is causing a stumbling block for some people. And it's causing an issue for some people. And so you've got 8, 9, and 10 are all put together. Let me tell you something about 8, 9, and 10 for just a second so you get this. In chapter number 8, he says, yes, you've got liberty. Maybe you've got knowledge. You know something about that. There's no God. There's no real God at that temple. And I can do whatever I want to do. And maybe you have knowledge, but maybe you ought to have, instead of just having knowledge, have charity and have a love for your brethren that makes it so I'm not going to hurt them. I may have liberty to do something, but it's not if it's going to cause my brethren to have a problem. I've got to be careful about that. So that's what he makes a deal about. And then he gives them an example. Chapter 9 is an example. Chapter 9 is this example. He says, I have the right. You go back and look, chapter 9. Chapter 9, I have the right to be supported, but the church supporting Paul. And Paul understood there was a problem in that church. So Paul said, I'm not going to take that money that's supposed to be to support that preacher. I'm not going to take it. Now, Paul says, I have the right to. It's what's supposed to happen. But he says, I'm not going to do it because there's obviously a problem in that church. And Paul is giving himself as an example of you. Somebody says, well, I've got the right to do what I want to do. And Paul said, I have a right to be compensated. But yet I'm not going to do it because you have a problem with it. And I would rather err on the side of charity. I have knowledge that says I should be. But Paul says, I'm not going to do it because I love you enough that I don't want anything I'm doing to hurt you. So he gives an example of setting. Watch now. He gives an example of setting aside his rights for the betterment of somebody else. He gives that example. But now you get to chapter 10. And that's where I want to get tonight just for a little bit and look at this. He started off in chapter 8 talking about meat sacrificed to idols. He's going to end chapter 10 with talking about meat sacrificed to idols. Sandwiched in here, though, he's got some other things. And look at chapter 10. I'm going to go through just three points in this that I think will be helpful to you when it comes to this matter. Look at chapter 10, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant. This is on top of what he's already said. Moreover, I would not have you be ignorant. How that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did all eat that the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followeth them. And that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, neither be idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of the serpents. Neither murmur ye as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyers. Now all these things happened unto them for examples. And they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he stand, and that's why I titled the message, take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. And I didn't even plan for y'all to sing that song tonight, but what a great song to sing for this message. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. And then he'll go from there and begin to talk about this thing about joining themselves up to these temples. I want to look at this because I think this is interesting. I've always preached it. And I think when I've preached it at other places, I preached it at a youth group, a youth meeting in Florida a while back, and when I've always preached it, I've just isolated the text from here and not thought about how it fits in and everything else. I want you to think about how it fits in. He's going to use this as an example. He's going to talk about what happened in the Old Testament, and he's making an example to us in the context of this thing about I have liberty, I can do what I want to do, and we're causing people to stumble. I want you to understand that in all these cases I'm going to bring up in a minute and show you, somebody was the leader in making a decision to begin to murmur against God. Somebody was the leader to begin to lead people towards fornication or towards idolatry. And it influenced other people and they began to follow as well. And it led to many people. In fact, he says 23,000 people at one time being led into some really destructive things. And the context of it is you've got to be careful and take heed, because not only can you fall, but you can get a lot of other people to fall into temptation. And so I want to look at that a little bit tonight, maybe draw something from it that maybe it helped to us. The first point I want you to see is the common experience. When he goes back from verse number 1 down to verse number 6, he's talking about this example that they had. And he talks about a common experience. And one of the things he does, he kind of links what they went through to what we would go through. And so he talks about not being ignorant, that the fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and eat the spiritual meat and drink that spiritual drink, which is Christ the rock. And so that's what you see this situation. Now, the idea of that, I don't think that they understood everything at that moment. He's connecting what we have to what they did and trying to make a little bit of the common experience they had. Now, let me say it like this. When they were in Egypt, they were there in bondage. And remember, the blood was applied. Remember, there was a blood applied to the doorpost. That would, a lamb was slain. Blood was placed on the door. Death angel passed over. All that had the blood applied, they would be saved from the wrath that was coming, right? That's what you see. And they all walked out. They all passed through the Red Sea. Now, when they did that and they passed through, they left their old life behind. They come out on the other side of the Red Sea and they go on into their new journey. That was almost kind of like, there's the salvation. This is what he says, like the baptism. And they didn't touch any water. When Moses got to the other side, it wasn't that Moses got them all to the other side and said, all right, let's form a line. We're dunking everybody under the water. It wasn't what he was doing. What he was saying was it was a type of them leaving their old life behind. The blood applied, leaving the old life behind, passing through the Red Sea, and then coming on the other side and walking into a new life and beginning to experience Jesus Christ, beginning to experience God. He's my meat. He's my drink. He's everything I need in my life. It's all found in Him. That's what he's saying. And he's saying, just like they left their old life of bondage, blood applied, crossing through that Red Sea, is just like your salvation, your baptism. And then on the other side of it, you're beginning to learn how to walk with Him, experience Him, and trust Him for all of your needs when it comes to the drink, when it comes to the food, everything. He is my rock to build on. That's what he's saying, the common experience that we've got. And so then I want you to see not only the common experience, I want you to see the common example. Look at verse number 7. He goes through from 7 all the way down to verse number 10 and gives you these examples. I'm going to take the majority of the time tonight just looking at those examples and show you what those are. Now, I've talked about them in different places before, but I don't know that for a long time now have actually dug deep into these. But when he says in verse number 6, now these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. He's going to go through four common temptations. They start here with the neithers. Neither be idolaters, verse 7. Then verse 8, neither let us commit fornication. Verse 9, neither let us tempt Christ. Verse 10, neither murmur ye. All four of those are temptations, he says, are common to man. And in those four things, it's interesting that those four common temptations are temptations that I'm telling you, you have to deal with today. The same things. Because he's saying, not only do you have a common example, but now you're facing a common example, a common experience, but now a common example. And the same temptations that mess them up on the journey are the same things that will mess you up on your journey. Let's look at a few of those tonight. The first one in verse number 7. Neither be ye idolaters as some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. I don't know if you know which one that one is, but hold your place right there and go back to Exodus chapter number 32. We're going to look at these tonight and just kind of talk about what is common about this. Because he says these are common temptation where it's common for people to get led astray. And not only you get off path because of it, but you also leading other people off path because of it. Look at Exodus chapter number 32. You remember the story, Exodus 32? Exodus 32, and look at verse number 1. And when the people saw that Moses delayed, remember he's up on the mountain getting the commands of God, and he hasn't come back. It's been 40 days, 40 nights. And when the people saw that Moses delayed, all right, here's your first common temptation. Delay. Delay. It was something that messed them up, and I'm telling you it's something that messes up us. God, you're taking too long. If you don't move in a certain amount of time, I'm going to start doing it myself. God, if I have to wait too much longer, I might move off. You might not say it this way, but I might move off to another God. I might start following something else instead of following God because God takes too long in what He's doing in my life. Look at it. He says, and when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what has become of him. And Aaron said unto them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And he said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast of the Lord. And they, here's the same thing they said, and they rose up early in the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said unto Moses, go get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed thereunto and said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. So I want you to understand that the common temptation, I want you to get it now, listen real close. The common temptation that got them off track where God was not well pleased with a lot of them, and a lot of them end up dying because of it. The common temptation for you is this. When God doesn't move fast enough in your life. When there's a delay. You know, waiting is part of the journey with God. When you look at Abraham and Sarah, they were told they're going to have a child. They had to wait some 25 years before it actually came to pass. Now, let me tell you something. Listen, we read that and we look back at that and say, oh, yeah, that took 25 years. But we've done that. We've done that where it took 20 something years. And when we talk to people sometimes, this is what we say to them. I want you to get this point. I'll labor as long as I need on each point. And if I need to, I'll break this up into multiple sermons. I need you to get each one of these points because there are only four things he lists that are common to men. And I promise you, in the amount of time that I've been doing this, it hasn't been 11 years of being the senior pastor of this church. I've watched these four things knock a ton of people out of the race. And one of them being delay. God, you're just taking too long. You didn't come. Look, he said they've turned aside quickly. And we're not going to wait. It's how many days has it been? 40 days. Only 40 days and you're ready to quit? That's taking too long. I've got to know what's happening. Listen, if they lived in a world that had to go that fast, we definitely live in that world. I mean, I don't even like sitting in line at McDonald's having to wait. Nobody likes to wait. We live in a world where everything's got to be microwaved. Stacy at one point got in this kick about a convention. What is it with that oven called? A toaster oven. A toaster oven versus a microwave oven. I don't know if she was listening to Lesser Roloff maybe. I don't know what it was, but she got to where she's anti-microwave. Nothing go in the microwave. And I'm like, honey, why are you putting that in the toaster oven? You're just reheating pizza. I mean, my goodness, I can put that in the microwave. She said, no, it's got to go in the toaster oven. It's going to be so much better in the toaster oven. And I'm like, all right, yeah, it may be better, but I'm willing to sacrifice the taste for the quickness. I want it to be done 5 minutes ago. I'm hungry for a pizza. I want it right now. And we have that. Don't we have that debate? We have that debate sometimes. It's now she's more concerned with health and things being right. I'm more concerned with things being fast. That's what I wanted. We live in that kind of world. We live in a microwave fast world. We want it right now. We don't care if it's right. We don't care if it's even good. We just want it fast. That's the world we live in. And we've gotten to the point. I want you to listen to me real close. Everybody listen real close. Because here's the problem that a lot of you are going to have that's going to get you off track. That things don't move as fast as you want them to move. Because things don't move as fast as you want them to move, you will then take matters in your own hands and do it your way. This happens. Moses was told he's going to be the leader of his people. It entered his heart. 40 years later, he's doing it. David was told he was going to be king when he was out feeding the flocks. It took many years before he ever got to be it. Paul was told he was going to be a preacher of the Gentiles and then spent 3 years in the desert. And then later, it still took 10 years before he ever got to do his ministry. I want you to understand that things take time. Everything takes time. Ministry takes time. Being in ministry takes time. When I graduated from Bible school, I thought, I'm ready right now. I'm ready for it right now. And I promise you, I wasn't ready right then. There were some things that I needed to go through some things and learn some things before I was ready to lead other people and work with people. But that is not the way we work. Our mind works that I've decided today I want something. Tomorrow it better happen. That's the way we live our lives. And if somebody was to say to you, let's just wait a little bit longer, you say, no, I can't do that. And if you make me wait too long, I'm just going to go do it on my own the way I want to do it anyway. People do it all the time. I've watched it happen over and over and over again. Some of the best things that you will find take time. I've used this illustration a ton of times here. But the Chinese bamboo tree, you plant it, you have to water it with seeing no results. Anybody know how long? 5 years. With no results. Every day you go water it. Every day you go water it. You keep doing it. 5 years. At the end of 5 years, it'll break through the ground. It'll grow 90 feet in 5 weeks. But you've got to water it for 5 years. Now, let me tell you what most of you would do. I didn't see any results in 5 minutes. I'm done. I'm not going to take care of this anymore. I'm not doing it. I'm not seeing any results in my ministry. I quit. I'm praying about some things happening in my marriage. I'm going to quit on my marriage before I ever see it actually start to really do something. I quit. You're going to quit too soon. And you're going to kick yourself for doing it. Somebody's been told this before. I know you know it. The difference between a hole and a well is how much? What is it? 6 inches. One more shovel and you would have hit water. But you quit just a little bit too soon. Now let me say, this is easy to preach about. This is easy to say. It's different to live. Because some of you are in those situations even now, and instead of just waiting on God to fix the situation, to open it up, to do it, you've gotten to the place you're like, you're getting antsy and you got to figure this out. And you start just, I'm going to make it work and I'm just going to force it. And I'm going to do it my way. And there may be a time that God may say, all right, well, just go do it your way and just see how well it really works doing it your way instead of my way. I don't know how many people I've seen just they could not wait for God to work it out. And they just took it back from God and said, I'll do it. Wait a minute, but isn't he the God that led you? Yeah, but I'm going to make me new gods that can lead me. Because I'm just not going to wait on him to do it. So the first temptation that got some people off. And then, listen, Aaron knew better. But Aaron fell for what those people said. And then ended up making a decision that led a lot of people astray. 3,000 people died when he came down off the mountain. When he came in off the mountain, his anger was kindled, and he said to them, he said, who's on the Lord's side? Come over here. And then he'd tell those guys, get out your sword. Every man go kill his neighbor. 3,000 people died because somebody couldn't wait for 40 days. 40 days. I'm going to tell you, it's a common temptation. Some of you might be in that right now of, I've got to wait. I've got to wait on God. I just had to wait a little bit longer on God. Wait until God gives me clear guidance. When you talk about the young preachers, it's like I gotta be doing something. I gotta be doing something. No, let me tell you what you gotta be doing. You gotta be sitting, waiting, and learning. I gotta be going. I gotta be doing. No. You need to sit and wait and let God. Paul was there with Barnabas and the church at Antioch. And I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, from the time he was called to the time that they actually had Acts 13, where it says, "Separate me out, Paul and Barnabas, Saul and Barnabas, for the work I've called them to do." I believe it was 10 years from the time that he was actually got saved to when he actually went out. And God made it clear, now is the time. You have to be able to be patient and wait. The common temptation of delay. Look at the next one. Look at verse number 8. "Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Let's look at that one. I want you to go back to Numbers chapter number 25. Numbers 25. Go back to that one. Numbers 25. Numbers 25. Let's look at this one. This one is a very interesting one when you look at it. Numbers 25. When you get to Numbers 25, I'm going to give you a little bit of running start to get into it. And this one's going to be another common temptation, and I want you to get it. Numbers 25, but I'm going to talk to you about Numbers 22 through 24 for a second. In Numbers 22 through 24, Israel is doing really good, and so Moab becomes scared of what Israel has done already. And so because the people of Moab get upset and get scared about it, their king, remember, Balak is their king. Their king Balak says, "Man, I can't have these people doing what they've done before with us. So I'm a little bit nervous. So somebody go send for that man Balaam that talks to God." And so they send for Balaam. Remember the story of Balaam and Balaam's ass. The Bible talks about it that way. All right. So he says, "Send for Balaam and let's find out if Balaam can go and curse these people." Remember the story. I want you to think about the process of what happened here. OK, I want you to think about it. And I want you to relate it to your own situation. All right. So in chapter 22 all the way to 24, they send for Balaam. Balaam says, "Nope, can't do it." He says, "Well, we're going to give you treasure." "Nope, can't do it." So they go away. They come back. And he asks God. God says, "No, you can't go. You can't go." And so they go back and they come back again and say, "Well, we'll give you more money this time. Could you do it for more money?" "Well, let me ask God again. Maybe you can see if God give maybe now that you say more money, let me ask God again and see what God says about it." So they ask God again about it, and God says, "Okay, go." But the next verse down says God was angry. Remember, he goes, and when he goes, the donkey he was on gets beaten because the donkey's seeing the angel standing in the way that's going to kill him. God said, "I was about to kill you over it." I want you to think about it for a minute, the process of what you're talking about here. A man that has already asked, "God, should I do this?" And God says, "No, you don't do that." And somebody says, "We got more money for you." "Well, let me ask a second time. Let me see if now I should do it." And the person says, "Yep, I'm gonna go." God says, "Okay, but it's not going to work out good for you." And so when he gets there, they make some altars and Balak says, "All right, I want you to curse God's people." He says, "All I can do is tell you what God says." He goes and God says, "You can't curse them. You've got to bless them. These are my people. Can't curse my people. You've got to bless them." So he says, "Well, let's go to a different place. Maybe from a different place that would work better." Takes him to a different place, does the same sacrifices. "Now I'll curse them." And it still doesn't work. He can't curse them. He's got to bless them. And he goes a third time and says, "Now do it." He says, "He can't curse them. He's only got to bless them." And so they do this all this time. And then they just split off from each other. It says they go their different ways. And that's all you read about in the book of Numbers. That's all you read about. That's what happens. Now I want you to read Numbers 25. Because you can't curse a blessed people. But a blessed people can bring a curse on themselves. So you got chapter 25. I'm going to show you. This is what he said in 1 Corinthians 11. Here's a common temptation, and he linked you back to this. I want you to see what it says. Numbers 25, and look at verse 1. "And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab." Now, this is an interesting statement. Everything was fine. Now, all of a sudden, they're starting to commit. They're committing whoredom with the daughters of Moab, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat and bowed down to their gods. And Israel joined himself to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye every one his man that were joined unto Baal Peor. It goes through all this stuff, and there's many of them that die this day from this situation that's taking place. So what have you seen happen so far? This is what the story you don't get, the part of the story you don't get is this. I'm going to read two verses to you. You have to look at 2 Peter 2:15. We'll link it up together. And it says this, two things about it. It says, which have forsaken the right way and have gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Bozer, who loved the wages of righteousness. Anybody told you about Balaam? So that Balaam loved money, so he made a decision to go do this based off of his love for money. That's the first thing you learn. But what did he do when it came to the people? How did the people go from a blessed people that you can't curse to now they're in a curse? How did that happen? The next verse I want you to think about is Revelation 2:14. It says this, but I have a few things against thee, but he's talking to the church, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam. And this is what it's going to tell you. It gives you an insight. Who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block. Same context that we've got from 1 Corinthians 10. To cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. Let me tell you what your second common temptation is this. You being deceived by your own desires. The first one was delay. The second one is you being deceived by your own desires. I mean, that's what he takes them back to. He says that neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 3,000. You understand that what took place? And I'm telling you, I've seen this happen to many people. They're on the right track. They're going the right direction. And as soon as they make up their mind that they're going to start serving God in some way, something comes along that is a desire or a lust. And a lot of times it has to do with sexual immorality. And watching people that are on the right path. I've had people come to my house before. I've had people here. They aren't here. You can't find them anywhere anymore now. They've come to my house before. Me and Stacy sit in the dining room, hold hands with them and pray for business endeavors. I mean, they're on the path to doing some really great things. And they want to serve God, and they want this all to be about God, and we're praying for them about God and about their walk with God and about their business and how it's going to be honoring to God and all those things. And man, there's a big door open for them, and it looks like everything's going to go the right way. And the next thing that happens is fornication. And not only did it mess up the business, but it messed up the marriage. Not only messed up the marriage, messed up the family. Not only messed up the family, it messed up other families. Not only messed up other families, but it messed up the testimony. And everything began to fall apart. Why? Because one person decided that they did not want to control themselves, didn't want to set aside what they wanted for the betterment of God, of their family, of their children, of the progression, of their testimony, of their church, of other families. They wanted what they wanted. And it didn't just hurt them, it hurt other people. Balaam says, I could use an extra paycheck. And Balaam taught Balak. He said, I can't curse them, but I can tell you what you can do. If you can get somebody good looking enough in front of some of them, then one or two of them will start getting together with them, and that will lead to other ones stumbling, and more of them will do it. And I can tell you what will happen. I can't curse them, but they can sure enough mess themselves up. I want you to listen, because some of you are looking at me with blank faces, and some of you, you know, I want you to get it. I've watched this happen to good people already. I've been doing this 30 years. I've been doing this 11 years. I've watched this happen to good families with great potential. And the fact that God is not moving fast enough, that has got them off track. And now they don't want to serve God. They want to do what they want to do. They're going to go do it their way. And they find out it's a hard way. And then you got some that through their own desires, they allow those desires to deceive them into thinking that's going to be okay. No one's ever going to find out. It's not going to be a problem. And it messed up everything. I'm telling you, it's a temptation that's common to man. This messed up some people that, hey, the blood's been applied. Hey, they've gone through the Red Sea. They've got the baptism of Moses. And now they're relying on the spiritual food and the spiritual drink of God. And they're doing all those things. And that's just like you. The blood's been applied. You've been saved. You're walking with God. You're learning how to rely on God. And you've got a bright future. You're headed for the promised land. Things are going great. But God doesn't take, it takes too long to do what you want to do. And you're off track then. Or as you're going something, and I've seen this happen with young people. I don't know how many times I've seen them get on fire for God and say, I'm sold out for God. I want to do something for God. And I'm telling you, within the week, something will show up. And next thing you know, there'll be something looks pretty good. And it takes them right off track. And all the hopes and all the dreams and all the desires and all the things they had in their mind, it goes right out the window. And then you're trying to get them, and you're trying to get them back on track, and you work and try to get them, and then you get them over there, and this is what has happened so often. I'm telling you, this is common to man. You try to get them back on track, and they say, well, I've already messed up so much, I don't know that I'm worth being useful for God anymore. And so now they just go completely off track. I mean, people that have potential, that the blood's been applied, that they're going with God, they got potential for the future, they can do great things for God, and now they're, you can't find them anywhere. Why? Because the common temptation got them. The common temptation of desire and deception. Boy, David was doing pretty good. So he got up on the roof and saw a woman. And a man that was a man after God's own heart. Man, you can't curse that guy. He could bring it in his own life. Well, let's move on. Look at verse number 9. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of the serpent. What's this one? Look back at Numbers chapter number 21. This is fairly quick. Numbers chapter 21. Go to that one really quickly. Numbers chapter 21. You got the common temptation of delay. The common temptation of being deceived by your own desires. Numbers chapter 21. They're moving along. Look at verse number 4. And they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea and to compass the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much, watch this next one, was much what? Discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses, wherefore have you brought us up out of the land, out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? And there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Let me give you the third one. The third common temptation is discouragement. That's what it said. I mean, it's very clear what the Bible says. You've got the one of delay. You've got one of they were deceived by their own lust, their own desires. And now you've got one that's discouragement. The way was discouraging. And so they eventually started this murmuring against God. Now, I'm going to tell you how many people have done that before. I mean, you're going, but it's not going the way you want it to go. It's not that it's taken too long. It's just that it's not going the way you want it to go. And because things aren't going the way you want it to go, you begin to get real disgruntled with God to the point that you start murmuring and complaining. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That spreads like a cancer. It just does. I mean, you know that to be true. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. If in our family, if I start spending all my time talking about how I don't like what God's doing here and I don't like what God's doing there and I don't like this, it begins to infect everybody in my family. Do you realize what he said in 1 Corinthians 10? He said, you need to take heed lest you also fall. That this is something where you're being a stumbling block to other people. These things that we're talking about don't just affect you. They affect everybody. God's not doing it the way I want to do it. God's not working this the way I want to work. Listen, when all this stuff was going on with the parking lot, man, I was finding myself being a disgruntled person every day, murmuring, complaining all the time. And it doesn't do any good for anybody else sitting around listening to me. Everybody else gets on the same bandwagon. You know what else? Everybody's discouraged and everybody's murmuring and complaining. And that's exactly how it works. I'm telling you, right now you can say amen to everything I'm saying, but that doesn't change the fact that when you get to your house, you still do it. It's a common temptation to just start murmuring and complaining and saying, God, what are you doing? As if God doesn't know what He's doing. Well, what are you doing? Carest not thou that we perish? The common temptation of discouragement. Last one I want you to see, Numbers chapter number 14. Numbers chapter 14, last one. Numbers 14. I mean, this is just what Paul wrote to that church. And Paul brought up these four things and said, you've got to be careful about these four things. These four things knocked out a bunch of people in the Old Testament. And so you've got to be careful about it yourself. Numbers chapter 14. Look at verse number 1. This is when they're getting to the promised land to go spy it out. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in the wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us up in the land to fall by the sword, that our wives or our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return to Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt. You know what he's saying? Let's go back to our old life. And you know where God had him at? He had him on the brink of victory. They were standing at the brink of the promised land. Land flowing with milk and honey. Land where you walk around the cities and you don't have to break out any kind of weapons of warfare. You just got to blow a trumpet and walls fall down. I mean, you're talking about a place where He fights your battles for you. I mean, I'm talking about victorious Christian life here. And somebody says, I just don't think we can do it. You remember the story, what happened? One of them says, I don't think we can do it, and it influences everybody else. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it, it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. The last one, I want you to get it, last one, and then we're basically done, is the temptation of disbelief. I just don't believe God can do anything. I just don't believe God can, listen now, I just don't believe God can fix my marriage. I just don't believe God can, I don't believe that we can do anything in this community. I just don't believe it's going to work out. I just don't believe that my situation is going to work. I just don't believe that God can do anything in my life. And I'm telling you, a lot of people have turned away from God and gone, listen, and gone, not just gone by the wayside, not just stopped, but just gone completely back into Egypt. Simply because they just don't believe that God can do something. You know what's interesting to me? I've always said this is so interesting. Here's a group of people, blood's been applied, crossed the Red Sea, relying on God. And you know what they kept saying? We read it several times. What they kept saying? We're going to die in the wilderness. 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 Anybody can tell me where they ended up? Dead in the wilderness. What a great life. I mean, the blood's been applied, folks. You've got great... I'm telling you the truth. Listen now, every one of you, you've got great potential. I was watching Kira sing up here. I don't mean to embarrass you, but your last service, I can do it. Fantastic potential. You know what'll knock you out of the race? It'll kill me if it does it. You know what'll knock you out of the race? Delay. You're taking too long, God, when it comes to what I want in my life. I'm telling you, the plan He's got for you, it may take time to develop. Trust Him. He knows what He's doing. Delay. My own desires. my own desires, or discouragement along the way, or just getting to the place where I just don't believe He can do something with me. You will limit your potential. I'm just preaching to you for a second. You will limit your potential if you don't believe that God can do something with your life. I promise you, God's got a plan for you. Got a plan for every one of you. Got a plan. Is that not just these little kids? I'm talking about every person. And John Pike, God's got a plan for your life. There's a plan for your life. Miss Judy, God's got a plan for your life. There's a plan for every person's life in this room. Who's going to stop it? You are. You say, how? By what is common. What's common? What knocked them? Look, you have a common experience, and you can look back in the past, look at their common example. And he ended it with saying this. Here's a common exhortation. Look at verse number 11. Now all these things happen to them for an example, and they are written for our admonition, upon the in whom the end of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he stand take heed lest he fall. Now you think I'm doing really good. You better take heed lest he fall. There is no temptation in you but such as common to man. These are the common temptation. But here's the great four words. In fact, say them with me. But God is faithful. Let's do it one more time. But God is faithful. Hey, that's the way you get through this. That's the way you're going to keep staying on track. You keep looking to a faithful God. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able. You know what he's saying there? You can get through the delays. Listen now. You can get through the delays. How long is it going to take? I don't know how long it's going to take, but you can get through the delays. We're an example of the fact that you can get through the delays. Now, for us, you say, well, what were y'all leaning on? I don't know what we leaned on completely. We just kept taking steps every day. You know, we kept looking back to like, well, Abraham, they waited this long a time. And we kept looking at the example in the Bible. And now you can look at their example, but you can look at our example if you want to. There's going to be delays. What you got to do is every single day you're going to have to just keep looking to the one that is faithful. When you say, I don't know how long it's going to take. Keep looking at the one that's faithful. Okay, that's what you had to do, right? You had to keep looking at the one that's faithful. Matthew, that's what you had to do, right? Keep looking at the one that's faithful. He didn't change. You keep looking to the one that's faithful. If you don't look at the one that's faithful, you get out of the race. Listen, what was the way? Was the way discouraging at times? Was there discouragements along the way? Did you go along the way and thought this way is discouraging? And was there? I just preached to you for a second. Was there a time in your life that I go back to Egypt? Yeah, you felt that way, but you didn't because you kept your eyes on the one that's faithful. It's a common thing. You know what I'd love to do? I'd love to stop seeing people get out of the race because of delays or discouragement or their own lust and desires just messing them up, and they get out of the race. This place should be full 10 times over with people that are still running the race for God and doing great things for God, but they're not. Why? Because some of them are back in Egypt. The blood's been applied. You don't have no business back in Egypt. They're back in Egypt. Why? Because God took too long and there was a delay, or my desires and my lust, or it was discouraging, or I just did not believe that God could do something with me. He's faithful. He's not going to suffer you to be tempted above your able. There is a way to escape. Will the temptation also make a way to escape? What's the way to escape? You've got to keep looking to the one that's faithful, that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. Let's get away from it. There was a study that was done a while back, and it was a discipleship journal. It ranked the greatest spiritual challenges to people. They said, this is what their ranking was. Number one, materialism. Number two, pride. Number three, self-centeredness. Number four, laziness. Number five was a tie between anger and bitterness. Number six was sexual lust. Number seven was envy. Number eight was gluttony. Number nine was lying. Now, the survey said this, and I don't understand percentages. I have to ask Stacy about some of this stuff later. But the survey noted temptations were more potent when they had neglected their time with God. 81% said that. And they were physically tired. 57% said that. I think you did something with that the other day in a Bible college or in a devotion. 57% said, when I've got physically tired, that's why you got to be careful of what you do at night. Resisting temptation was accomplished by prayer. 84% said prayer helped them resist temptation. Avoiding compromising situations, 76% said when they would avoid compromising situations, it actually helped them. Bible study, when they said they were in their Bible study, and 66% said they were able to resist when they were in their Bibles regularly. And 52% said, when I was connected with people to be accountable to other people, I was able to withstand against temptation. I'm telling you, God's given you a way to escape. And God's even highlighted the things. Wouldn't it be interesting then to know, He says, I can help you get through this. And not only that, I'll tell you the four most common ways that you're going to get tripped up. And every one of you would go, you're exactly right. The problem is, some of you, before the week's out, may face some of these things. And I hope you'll do them well by looking to where the one that's faithful. But too many of them that you should sit in this place and say amen, like whoever said it a while ago. You should say amen. Can't find them anymore. Why? One of the four things got them. One of the four things got them. I don't want to see that. Let's stand. Lord, do the work in the lives of these people now as, well, we have a song played for us and we got a chance to maybe spend some time in prayer tonight. I pray you'd help us. I can think of most people in this room, most of them are going through one of those four things today. Some of them just don't believe that you're going to do anything in their life and they're ready to quit. Some of them, the way has been discouraging and they're ready to quit. Some of them, you're taking too long and they're ready to quit. Some of them, their own desires and they're deceived by their own lust and they're ready to quit. And Lord, I pray you'd help each one of them to look to you because you are faithful. And I pray you do the work tonight that really only you can do. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. There's some come to the altar. She's going to play. Why don't you come pray tonight? I'm going to tell you, look, he said a big percentage of these people, they got victory by prayer.